This is the Scott Rintoul Show.
Besser shoots and scores right off the draw. First career NHL goal, Quinn Hughes.
On the official home of the Canucks.
And it's Markstrom again, this time with the glove.
Elias covers it and shoots, scores!
Sportsnet 650.
Oh, welcome back. It's Vic Nizar, Jamie Dodd. In our Vancouver studios, Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks. A couple of things planned today. Going to be talking to Tim Bontemps, big debut going on today. I think like the most hyped debut in the NBA since LeBron.
LeBron, probably, yeah.
We'll talk to Tim at 11:35. Then, of course, we've got Canucks Central. Allison Lucan will join us from The Athletic in Columbus. She does great work, not just on the Blue Jackets, because they're an exciting story, man. There is a... If you want to talk about teams that people wrote off heading into the season, that's one of them. And you wake up today, they are in a playoff spot. Unbelievable run that they have had. And you know, you could make a pretty safe case that John Tortorella might be Jack Adams' winner by the end of the year. So we'll talk to her at noon. And also, you know, great look at the league as well. Because, you know, now that we're here at the break, and, you know, there's two games today, but we're basically at the break. But really interesting to see where everything is around the league, not just what's happening in Columbus. We'll touch on all that with her. But the big news of the day here, it's been ringing since yesterday in the program. Ryan Kesler joining, Scott Walker, Andrew Walker, and Satyar Shah.
Whatever.
Close enough. Joining him yesterday and it's carried over through the morning. I know the morning show did a poll, you know, where do you stand on Ryan Kesler being in the Ring of Honor? And, you know, Kess kind of bared his soul to some degree.
Absolutely.
And you see the importance it could have on him. And we'll play some of it back for you. And share your thoughts, 650, 650. It is interesting, though, because it's been a certain amount of time, right? And his career is effectively over, still not retired. It's just, it's over.
Yeah.
When you're starting a podcast, it's over.
Yeah.
Vince Carter started a podcast, and it's like, I'm on my way out.
J.J. Redick is the only guy who can get away with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how that works, but.
So, part of this is image repair, I'm sure. And part of this felt earnest as well.
Oh, absolutely. I understand the tendency for people to say, oh, well, now he's just sucking up because he wants, you know, he's starting a career in media and he wants the recognition from the Vancouver fans. Yeah, I get why some people are frustrated and when some people might be cynical about it now. But if you actually listen to the interview, and this is kind of he was on the station last season as well mm-hmm. and gave a very similar talk. Again, it was very emotional and genuine. And if you listen to those interviews, I don't understand how you could not come away with at least a little bit of empathy and a little bit of understanding mm-hmm. because he's obviously sincere about what he's saying. It does not come off as cynical at all when you actually listen to him.
I will say, though, I think I understand why there's so much vitriol, right? I get it from fans who feel betrayed by it to some degree. The underlying part of all this, too, like, why did Ryan Kesler want to leave?
He wanted to go to a contender.
He wanted to go to a contender and didn't want to be part of a rebuild.
Yeah.
Now, it's not as if the Canucks did a rebuild when he was here, but I think he saw the writing on the wall, so decided
course,
not to
yeah.
be part of it. So he knew what the Canucks had to do, but when you look back at history, it's not as if the Canucks went
they
down
didn't necessarily, no.
They didn't necessarily. And so if you go down the road of, oh, he should have stayed, and I wanted him to be part of the team, the real conclusion we're talking about here, Ryan Kesler may have saved the Canucks from themselves. Now, they would have done that whole rebuild thing anyways, but let's not forget, one of the issues was you had to give him a new contract. Like, mm-hmm. One of the sticking points for Anaheim right now is they have 2 years left of this contract at just a hair under $7 million, and there's not a lot you can do with it. It's just on your books. So if you wanted Ryan Kesler to stay, you probably wanted Ryan Kesler to sign a contract too.
Yeah, and we've seen, and listen, obviously with hindsight, it's easy to say, you know.
But it's not even hindsight. Like, the player recognized this.
Oh, for sure.
fans.
But what I mean to say is, at the time, you didn't know how his career would turn out. You didn't know he would be injured with this many years left on his deal. It was a risk.
You knew there was a race against the clock.
For sure. And you're right. The way it worked out is, you did not want to sign into that contract.
Like, Anaheim signed this contract knowing, hey, there's a
huge risk.
There's a 2 to 3 year blitz that we're willing to take that risk, and they basically got 1 year out of it, 2 years out of it.
And it didn't, And the rest is just sunk cost at this point for them. Yeah, so it ultimately worked out better for the Canucks to avoid taking on that contract. For me, though, even without that kind of positive spin on it, man, he wanted to go play for another Stanley Cup. And it didn't work out in that sense, but he went to 2 conference finals in his first 3 years in Anaheim. And the Canucks needed to start over and rebuild. And now we're seeing the eventual fruits of that, even though it was a bit of a circuitous path to get here. So I was never that angry at Ryan Kesler to begin with.
I'm very pro player mobility.
Exactly. I tend to take the player side in these things anyway, and he had an extremely, extremely relatable reason. He wanted to win, and he knew it wasn't going to happen here. I think that is part of it, because him leaving was a sign that the good times were over, right? And his exit kind of became a symbol of everything the Canucks fans went through from 2010 to 2013, 2014, 2015, right? There was the highs, and then there was just increasing frustration, people getting angry, people getting pissed off, and then it all came crashing down. And Kessler's exit really is the turning point from one era to the next when you look back at it. So I think fans tend to wrap up all their emotions that they feel from all the other things that were going on, and they put them on Ryan Kesler for that time.
GB chiming in, 650-650. Regardless how Kesler came off in those last two interviews, he screwed over the team and franchise, and that's the point. Okay, look, you're allowed to feel that way. I'm not disputing how you feel. I'm just trying to talk about the facts here. And the facts are, you extracted about 90% of his career. So you got the lion's share of his career and peak years. Anaheim got the tail end of that peak, but you extracted a lot. And the vitriol that gets directed at Louis Erickson right now, it's like the same situation would have been towards Ryan Kesler.
And look, I'm not saying you have to love Ryan Kesler. You have to get down with him as a person or as a personality. You have to think he should be in the Ring of Honor. I'm not even sure he belongs in the Ring of Honor. But the idea that he screwed over the team, I just disagree with that.
Yeah, that's
I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
And it's not even about how it turned out. And I get you're saying, well, he forced his way to Anaheim and he limited who they could trade with. Well, that's what you get when you give guys no movement clauses. That's the power they have. That's not Ryan Kessler's fault. That's the franchise's fault. Him using that power does not mean he's screwing over the Canucks. It's him using the power the Canucks gave to him.
We'll play back some of these clips. It's Bick Nizar, Jamie Dodd, Justin Morissette producing our show today. What's going on?
Well, I was just going to say, look, I'm for full context, I'm a huge Ryan Kesler fan. Mm-hmm. Loved him in his early days as a player because he just looked like a guy who was trying his heart out on every single shift coming out of a kind of lazy team in 2005-06, I thought personally. But if people want to be mad, I think it's because this city loves an underdog. It's playing out exactly the same way with Louis Erickson right now. Roberto Luongo,
The Louis Erickson thing is totally different.
But let me just say, people came back around on Luongo if they were down on him by the end, because it was clear that he was getting jerked around by the organization and by the coaches at the time, so on, etc. If Roberto Luongo wanted to come out and play a violin for himself and say, my contract sucks, there's a lot of basis to that. Ryan Kesler was being played like the third most minutes of any forward in the NHL. Mm-hmm. John Tortorella was giving him every opportunity to shine. He had all this preferential treatment and still wanted to play the woe is me, I'm getting screwed card without actually getting screwed by anyone. So, like, I fully understand people's bitterness, but at the same time, that's a very small chapter on the whole story of his career.
The case for, like, Ring of Honor, let's base it on his merit to the team, not the way he exited.
Sure.
And that's the case we're talking about here. And that's why there's this, why is there trying to smooth it over? You left and you don't deserve to be put in this ring of hallowed Canucks. Well, let's not pretend that there wasn't some acrimony with Trevor Linden leaving, with Pavel Bure leaving,
yeah.
right? So that issue, there's a precedence for
even
things of time healing.
It wasn't acrimonious necessarily, but Marcus Naslund walked away from the team as a free agent.
Yeah.
So there's two discussions. There's the Ring of Honor discussion, and then there's just the how do you feel personally, and what's your emotional attachment to Ryan Kessler? And they're connected, but they're ultimately separate. To Justin's point, you're right that, you know, Kessler was complaining, and maybe he was kind of moaning and whining on his way out. But even that I find a little bit relatable because, again, from 2011, the peak of thinking, And a lot of fans thought, I know I did, after they went up 2-0, we are going to win the Stanley
yeah.
Cup. I'm sure Ryan Kessler in the back of his mind thought about that too. The peak from there and then the slide over the next three seasons, getting bounced in the first round twice, and then ultimately it just collapsing in the Tortorella years. Think about how frustrating that was to go through as a fan and how angry you got watching that. And now imagine how it must have felt for a player in it to experience that same roller coaster. So even if he wasn't getting objectively screwed by the team, I totally understand why he would have been so, so frustrated with the situation the Canucks were in. I that's exactly how I felt at the same time.
A couple of texts here coming in, a lot coming in, 650, 650. And again, this isn't about trying to campaign to get...
People have opinions about
yeah.
this. Who would have thought?
Not me. Look at us. Like, again, this is really just about, does his Canucks career merit being in the Ring of Honor? That's what we're talking about. If you want to judge it, be like, oh, you know, it didn't really live up to a certain standard, and I think it's just a good career, not a great career. That's fine. Just on the personality reason is where I get a scream. It's like, who cares if
yeah.
he was kind of a jerk, or if he annoyed the media, or if he exercised a clause in his contract. That doesn't really matter. Michael in Maple Ridge, chiming in 650, 650. Kessler should definitely not be in the Ring of Honor. Like a bunch of people, Vancouver celebrates mediocrity way too much. This is coming from a diehard Canucks fan. And look, that's part of it too, that, you know, how many Hall of Fame players do the Canucks
yeah.
have?
And for me, and I know I'm defending Kessler here because of these recent interviews, I don't think I'd put him in the Ring of Honor. Because he's outside the top 10 in games played in franchise history. He's outside the top 10 in points in franchise history. Not that those two markers are automatic and they mean you get in, but it kind of illustrates where he stands. He won the Selke, but obviously, like everyone else, he never won the Cup. So he's a borderline case. And for me, what tilts it to not putting him in is I'm a fan of whether it's a Hall of Fame, whether it's retiring numbers, trying to keep it small. Don't let it bloat. Don't let it go crazy because you got to plan for the future. And I would have Luongo going in the Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Edler is going to have to go in the Ring of Honor, obviously. You know, you're going to have to make a spot for Louis Erickson someday. So that was a joke, by the way. You're running.
I followed.
You're running out of room already, right?
Oh, and I don't worry about that.
You got to keep the standard high. You got to keep the standard
high. Sure, but the standard's been set is what we're saying, right? I'm not worried about running out of room on the space at the top of Rogers Arena. But yes, I do agree with like what Elliot Friedman has said on times on the station of, if you have an iconic team like that, you be unabashed about it. Just have a celebration for every one of them. And, you know, maybe it's, yeah, you have a Ring of Honor for like the 2011 team. And you just list them all there. That could be a thing, but... you know, just on the idea of how much we think about it and you know, the recovery aspect of it. Just listen to Kessler yesterday of how much he thinks about it.
I really enjoyed my time in Vancouver. Saying that, it's, you know, my one regret would probably be not winning a cup in Vancouver and winning it for the fans. You know, I think about that a lot, what the parade would be like, what, you know, we were just talking about it. I coached Little Caesars and I was talking about it with my coaches there. They were asking me questions and they even brought it up. Like, could you imagine what that parade would have been like? And I'm like, yeah, I think about that at least once a month. So it's tough to swallow.
Right, I guess so yesterday on the program. Just the memories coming back. And again, this gets construed into a loyalty debate and, you know, the personality aspect of another text here. Said he had the right to leave and chase the ring, but he didn't have to screw the team over to do it. Here's the thing. It's not Ryan Kessler's job to build the team.
Nope.
It's Ryan Kessler's job to earn his contract and play hockey. Did he make the job tougher? Sure he did. But you know what? The GM's job's supposed to be tough.
Yep.
It's not the player's job to make it easy.
It's not who I am to begrudge a player using his contract like that. That's what they argue for. And remember, he took less money. Every player who gets a no-movement clause takes less money.
I think it was someone was pointing out just recently, just the idea if you want to waive a no-trade clause, should you get rewarded for doing so?
If you want to put that in your contract, a trade kicker or whatever, sure. I don't think just as a
loyalty bonus
as a basis,
a loyalty charge. Like if a team comes to you and says, "Hey, we want you to waive your no-trade clause that you got." You earned, and now you can have this. And a team says, "Hey, we need you to waive it." Should you get a bonus for it?
I don't think as just a standard that you should get a bonus. If you want to make that of something you can negotiate, sure, go for it. I don't really care one way or the other too much. But that it's important to remember that Kessler might have handcuffed the team a little bit as he was leaving, but by taking less before that, he was helping the team, and that was a conscious strategy by management at the time was. We're going to get less now or pay less now for these guys. And we know it could come back to haunt us a little bit in the future because they all have these no trade clauses, but that's what we have to do to win right now. The team made that calculated risk. And in Kessler's case, it backfired, but it wasn't Ryan Kessler's idea, right? It took two parties to agree to that.
And also it's like, we all know he wanted to go to a contender, right? Isn't that already applying a filter? How many real contenders are there?
Of course there is. That want Ryan Kessler and that have a spot in there, right? Of course it is.
You're going to whittle it down to 3-4 teams no matter what.
It's not like there would have been 29 other teams bidding. Right?
Yes.
That's not how it works.
650, keep your comments coming in. We'll get to some of them. But we want to touch on a couple of league-wide stuff too. Because if you look around what happened last night, Vegas... obviously loses in regulation, more importantly. So heading into the break, officially, the Vancouver Canucks will be in first place. But, Jamie, you noticed this last night. You look at all the scores. There was a trend in all the games.
Yeah, there's three Western Conference versus Eastern Conference matchups last night. Of course, Vegas versus Boston was one of them. And the Western Conference team lost all three matchups. And all three of those teams, Vegas, Winnipeg, Chicago, are... competing with the Canucks theoretically for a playoff spot. And it just highlights, we know this has been happening, but it just highlights that the Eastern Conference is much stronger than the Western Conference this season. And it shows that, but it also is like, man, are you scared of any of these teams the Canucks are competing with for a playoff spot?
Man, not really.
The one we would have said like 2 weeks ago even was Vegas, but the longer it goes...
It's still Vegas to me because...
they're the most scary, but are you scared?
Okay.
Right?
If I'm looking at this from a holistic point of view, without the eyes of thinking about it from the Vancouver Canucks, no. The only team that really scares me is St. Louis. If I'm looking...
In the Western Conference.
In the Western
Not Conference. Not even Colorado.
I have my concerns about them.
To me, that's the clear top tier.
They would be the next team there, right? But I still feel like you could beat them. However, if I'm looking through the eyes of the Vancouver Canucks, the teams that I am worried about is still Vegas. I just feel like that's the worst matchup that they could face. And right now, they are dangerously close to that being a playoff matchup.
Okay, if you're worried about in a playoff matchup, sure.
Yes.
But in terms of
who's
competing for a playoff space...
It's tough, man. I still want to believe in Nashville because they have so many games in hand. But I don't really buy Winnipeg. I don't buy Chicago.
Nashville has 5 games in hand on Vegas.
It's like,
how does that happen?
It's unreal because they started the the year elsewhere. But if one of those two teams ends up in the wild card, Nashville, Vegas, it's like that's a little concerning.
Sure, and you have to meet one of those.
But as far as people leapfrogging Vancouver... Vegas is the only one. Because it just, if they get, it feels like if they get one D-man, and it doesn't even need to be an Alex Petrangelo type, it could just be a depth kind of guy. A 4-5, a 3-4 kind of D-man. That solves a lot of issues. Because the forward firepower in that group is hilariously scary.
If Marc-Andre Fleury gets back to his standard, that makes a big difference for them as well. And we're talking about the matchup and potentially being in the playoffs. We should also mention last day of the season, Canucks hosting Las Vegas. So could be a potential playoff preview, could be a playoff spot on the line. And that would be a nervous moment for Canucks fans, given how the games against Vegas have gone.
Could be playoff seeding.
Yeah. Could be huge stakes.
I still feel like, again, two things need to happen. The Canucks need to be bad, and a bunch of teams need to be good. And I just don't feel like both of those things are going to happen.
Yeah. It sounds bad to say, but like I'm more confident that a bunch of teams won't be good than I am that the Canucks won't be bad. You know what I mean? I could see the Canucks sliding a little bit, but are those other teams going to step up and play great? No.
And that's the thing, right? And the Canucks don't control that. And the way this playoff format is set up, don't necessarily agree with it. I see what they're trying to achieve, but it's just, it creates fraudulent ways to advance, right? And the Canucks live in that reality. They may advance. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're a top 8 team or a top 4 team if they do advance, but they live in a reality where they get to play Edmonton and Calgary and Arizona in the playoffs.
Yeah, don't apologize for how the NHL has set up its playoff system. I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
And if it does, like the fact that a Pacific Division team is guaranteed a berth in the Western Conference Finals as a Final Four team is pretty obviously ridiculous this year. But what are you going to do? Those are the rules. Enjoy them. Make the most of them.
We'll get to a few more of your texts as well as they keep pouring in about Ryan Kesler. We'll do that on the other side of the break. We are going to be joined with Tim Bonteps as well because the Zion Williamson debut tonight. Appointment viewing?
Absolutely, especially with the NHL winding down for the All-Star break. I know there's a couple games tonight, but it's a great NBA night in general. Raptors, Sixers, big Eastern Conference clash. Then you've got Zion's debut. Lots to watch there.
There's two games going on tonight in the NHL. Winnipeg and Columbus, Detroit and Minnesota. So a little scoreboard watching to some degree if you really think Minnesota's got a thing going on. And they had an interesting note in 31 Thoughts today about Jason Zucker. So we'll highlight that coming up on the other side from Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts here on the Scott Rintoul Show, who's on holiday till Monday. He will be back. Thank you for the text messages. And it's Pick Nizar, Jamie Dodd, here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of the Scott Rintoul Show.
Woo! Text message inbox fired up. Goes into Ring of Honor, jersey retirements. We were having that conversation off air here, just about jersey retirements, and not necessarily Ryan Kesler going into the rafters, just. I guess you would say conceptually, do you like jersey retirements?
The whole idea of jersey retirements.
I think I've stated this before. I'm not, and it's cool for fans to have that moment to to put someone to the rafters. I'm more of the soccer philosophy of it's cool to uphold the legacy of a number. So again, everyone knows I'm a Manchester United fan. It's revered number 7. You get to try to replicate what so many greats have done, and that's a high standard that you get bestowed upon you, that this is a prestigious number, you've got to live up to it. And that to me is always a way to honor the number through generations. That even, I'm so far removed from some of the great players from the 60s, but I know the names a lot better. And I do feel like at times, like, is this next generation of Canucks fans, when they go to games, be like, why don't we wear number 12? You won't hear as many stories about number 12 because it's so far removed, right? Whereas if another great player wore 12 and it's like, well, he wore it because Stan Smith wore it and the next guy wore it and there was trust put in that player that, hey, you could uphold this legacy of this number that is so important to the fans and it carries on through generations that way.
Yeah, the closest we have to that in hockey is like the captaincy, and the Canucks have tried to do that where, they've involved the past captains in giving it to the new guys and they've really tried to establish that lineage of it. I agree with you. I don't have a problem with retiring numbers. My standards would be higher than the standards the Canucks have set for their franchise. But your point, I think, is well taken. There are different ways to honor players.
Mm-hmm.
And so the debate about Ryan Kessler going into the Ring of Honor is interesting, but we also got to remember, we can celebrate him. We can honor his career. The Canucks can even do it officially, even if they don't choose to put him in the Ring of Honor. But it's not necessarily a slight on him. It's just honoring people, celebrating history in different ways.
The other Mike in Maple Ridge, Kessler was way more impactful than both Burrows and Kurtenbach. And look, that's the argument for Kessler to go into the Ring of Honor is, you know, some players already in there have accomplished less to some degree
than he has. And that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a hot button issue. And I do want to play this back for you. Just, you know, what it would mean, what Ryan Kessler said last night when he joined the program, Andrew Walker and Satyr Shah, if he got put into the Ring of Honor.
Ryan Kessler joins us here on Sportsnet 650. Cool moment. Earlier this year, we saw your one of your partners in crime, Alex Burrows, go on the Ring of Honor. Is that something you think about? You'd like to have a moment in the sun eventually here in Vancouver? Do you think it's in the cards, not in the cards?
Yeah, obviously. It'd be fun. You know, I think it'd be special for me. You know, bring my family back. My son was born there, so, you know, he doesn't remember much. To bring him back into that arena and mm-hmm. you know, see old teammates and to be able to stand in front of that crowd and have that happen, it'd be special.
I think part of it, too, is from a fan point of view, I would say there's probably more people that want to support him than we realized.
Yep.
And you hear, okay, how special it would be for his family, for his kid. And fans, by and large, want to at least give something back to a player. I always look back, and I'm not trying to compare necessarily those two athletes, but I always remember Mariano Rivera's last game for the Yankees when the players came out to take him off the mound, and it was just an insane reverence. And fans want to give that piece back of their fandom back
to
the player.
And the nights we have for these guys, they're for the players, they're for the fans more, mm-hmm. right? The fans want the opportunity to salute Alex Burrows, to salute the Sedins. It's important for those guys too, and it's obviously meaningful for them, but you're absolutely right. It comes down to, do the fans want to celebrate this guy?
I mean, think about the moment from the home opener, right? Of Todd Bertuzzi getting that insane ovation in the home opener. I'm sure that there is a moment like that for Ryan Kessler just waiting to happen here as well.
It will be discussed. We'll touch more about it in the next hour. Canucks Central coming up at noon. Bick Nizar, Jamie Dodd here on Home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We were touching on what teams kind of you fear getting into this last little bit. Joey in Richmond is, and as far as about being worried about other teams, it's got to be for Vegas. For me, they clearly aren't afraid to make big moves ever. I could see them trying to get Kovalchuk, pushing for a middle-pairing D-man as well. They could also make moves and just get it together of their own volition and be a powerhouse again. And also not necessarily a team, but avoiding McKinnon in the playoffs is very key.
Yeah, that'd
you know
nice.
What?
That'd be
That's
nice.
A good way to put it from Joey in Richmond. I don't know if I'm afraid of Colorado.
But I'm afraid of Nathan McKinnon.
I'm afraid of Nathan
Absolutely.
McKinnon.
Absolutely.
That's fair.
Yeah. I'm afraid of Colorado, to be honest. They're a really good team.
Like, we've seen it, where he takes over series on himself.
Absolutely.
The same way Ryan Kessler took over series versus Nashville. He could absolutely do that. We're pleased to be joined now with Tim Bonteps of ESPN.com. Tim, thanks a lot for giving us some time today. We were talking about this just a bit earlier. Is this the most anticipated debut with Zion since, like, maybe LeBron?
I'm not sure if it's quite that far. I mean, we all have pretty short-term memories now, but you go back and look. I mean, guys like Anthony Davis and Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose and, a lot of these guys have all been really big names coming into the league. Joel Embiid, after missing a couple of years, his debut was pretty wild a couple of years ago when he played on opening night. I think the difference is that the fact that Zion has been out for half the season, the fact that it's happening in January, I think that gives it a little extra juice. If this had happened on opening night, it would have been a big deal, right? But it also would have been alongside Clippers-Lakers, and it would have been a bunch of new stuff going on at once. Whereas now it's like kind of a shot in the arm in the middle of the season for the league. So I think that gives it, not that it wouldn't have been exciting then, right? But I think it gives it more juice than it would have had if it had happened like we all wish it would have back in October.
Yeah, that's fair. Especially as the anticipation mounts, it's like, you know, the movie Jaws, you don't see the shark till like so long into the movie, and now you're like, oh, right. I can't wait to see it, and he's finally here, and you know, we know so much more about the NBA season now, and the Pelicans have kind of puttered along well enough without him. They're 2.5 games back of a play, or 3.5 games back of a playoff spot. You know, how much of a shot in the arm could this be to their season? And is 8th seed even a possibility for them?
Well, it certainly is a possibility, given that the Western Conference is you know, really falling off. You know, this talk that the West is way better than the East is no longer the case. They're both very similar levels now, and that's proven by the fact that a team that's several games under 500, like New Orleans, has a chance to get in the playoff mix. And frankly, a lot of the advanced metric systems, you know, including 538, have them as the favorite to get the 8 seed, despite the fact that they're in, I think, 13th place in the West. You know, between the combination of them having a very easy schedule down the stretch and getting Williamson back. Now, I think he's going to be on a pretty strict minutes limit for a while. There's always an adjustment period trying to work a guy like this back in. He could easily get hurt again, right? I mean, he's already had several knee injuries throughout his, you know, very young career. So, you know, I think just locking him in to play the rest of the season is probably a little premature too. But that being said, they do have a lot of talent. It doesn't seem like they're going to trade Derek Favors or J.J. Redick or Jrue Holiday. They're veterans that a lot of teams have been monitoring when they started the season really slow. And, you know, if they can get Zion back up to speed here relatively quickly and kind of seamlessly work him in, there's no reason to think they can't make the playoffs. And, you know, certainly the NBA would love to have them slip in there as an 8 seed and play, say, the Lakers in the first round. I mean, talk about a fun first-round series. I think everybody would sign up for that if it could happen right now, for sure.
Well, Tim, you mentioned Zion's injury history, and we know the Pelicans, they invested some time trying to adjust his body mechanics and hopefully keep him healthy in the long term. Rookies, typically, they have a hard time contributing, making a positive impact in the NBA, but we know Zion, not a normal rookie. Given all of the circumstances surrounding him, what are reasonable expectations for him just in terms of production for the rest of the season here?
I mean, it's just, I think the bigger issue is just getting him, having him stay healthy. I mean, I think he's going to be productive if he's on the court. It's just a matter of how much he's able to play, both from a physical standpoint and how many minutes they let him play. Like tonight, for example, I mean, I understand why everyone's excited. I don't think he's going to play more than at most 20 minutes in this game. He might not even play more than 15. So, you know, how long does it take him to get from 15, 20 minutes to 30 minutes, right? Does it take a month? Does it take 2 weeks? Like, I think there's a lot of stuff like that that needs to be sorted out. But all you have to do is look at what he did in the preseason. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but he was incredibly effective playing in the preseason, in part with his knee bothering him, right? So I think when he's on the court, there's little doubt that he'll be effective. I think it's just a matter of whether A, they can keep on the court, and B, how much he's able to be on it when he is healthy. Because, look, the Pelicans, like you mentioned, they've been doing everything they can to try to have him stay healthy for the long term. I would be very surprised if they just throw him back in the deep end and have him playing a ton of minutes. I think this is going to be a very slow, gradual build up to where they hope he can be in a few weeks.
As far as his career outlook, is, you know, talking about managing his minutes, and I think that's fair, obviously, to begin with, but just on the scale of, say, like Joel Embiid to LeBron James as far as player health, like how do you feel like the Pelicans might treat this?
Well, I mean, look, I think there's little doubt that Zion's a hell of a lot closer to Joel Embiid than LeBron James in terms of health. I mean, I think the guy I've compared him to really since I saw him play in college is Blake Griffin. And I think that's probably a good barometer for what's going to happen with, I shouldn't say what's going to happen with him, but what probably the most likely outcome is, right? Where he's a really, really good player, a great player. I mean, Blake at his peak was a borderline MVP guy, right? Almost won an MVP once or twice. Part of great teams with the Clippers, but is a guy who had a lot of knee issues and a lot of leg issues because he was so explosive. And over time his body kind of broke down, right? And I think just looking at Zion already having multiple knee issues and looking at his body type, I mean, anybody who's seen him play, he certainly does not look like a guy who is a typical NBA player, right? I mean, he looks more like a defensive lineman than an NBA player, which speaks to just how unbelievable his athleticism is. You would tend to think a guy like that, there's going to be more chance of him getting hurt. So, I mean, look, I think that the Pelicans are going to do everything they can to keep him healthy, but I think it's natural to assume that, you know, if you're talking about the scale of, like, is he closer to a LeBron who's always healthy or a Joel who's always a question, I think it's going to be a lot closer to the it's always a question than, you know, you can count on Zion to play 75, 80 games a year and be an Iron Man.
Tim, in the Eastern Conference tonight, big matchup between the Raptors and the 76ers, both on four-game winning streaks. I want to touch on the Raptors, but first on Philadelphia. They've been on this run since Joel Embiid has been out of the lineup. Ben Simmons is playing really well, and we know the top of a conversation there is always, can they build around these two guys? Do they fit together? Do you see Philly, not necessarily in this season, but at some point in the future, trying to move one of either Simmons or Embiid and just building around the other one? Or are they just going to bet on the talent of these two guys figuring it out eventually?
Well, I'm actually in Toronto for this game, and I'm very, very interested to watch it. Should be a fun matchup. It's too bad that Embiid is hurt, given the last time they played. He didn't score a point going up against Marc Gasol. Would have been fun to see how that matchup played out again. But to your question about them, I mean, look, Philly built this team this year to win a title this year, and they went all in with this group. And I think if they don't get to the finals or the conference finals, if they don't make a deep playoff run, then I think a lot of stuff's going to be on the table, and it could include what they do with one of those guys. Could include changing coaches. But if you look at the way this team has operated the past few years, they have not been afraid to make big moves and make bold moves, right? They traded for Jimmy Butler last year. They signed Al Horford, and they trade for Tobias Harris last year. They signed Al Horford. They re-signed Tobias Harris. They trade for Josh Richardson this summer, right? I mean, they have been as aggressive as any team in the league in recalibrating their roster. And I think let's say they play Milwaukee. Right now, I think they're slated to be the fourth or fifth seed. Let's say they play the Bucks in the second round and lose. They built this team to beat the Bucks. If they can't beat the Bucks this year and Giannis sticks around, I could see them going into the summer and say, hey, we got to recalibrate this again. It's just really hard to tell. The only thing I think you can say for sure about the Sixers is that drama tends to follow them wherever they go. And needless to say, if they have a third straight second round exit, there's going to be a lot of drama in Philly about that very question as to whether these two guys who played completely opposite ways can fit together. And if not, who do you decide to trade and what do you try to get for them?
Well, you mentioned you're in Toronto to see their game against the Raptors. Toronto, coming off the championship season, they're still in third in the Eastern Conference, despite all of the injury problems they've had. What to you has been most impressive about the Raptors' season so far?
I have to say the growth of Pascal Siakam again. I mean, look, like Nick Nurse has done an incredible job. They've dealt with all these injuries, right? They've played really well. But the fact that Pascal Siakam looks like an all-NBA player is a truly remarkable story. I mean, 2 years ago, this guy was starting and basically not allowed to do anything on offense but take corner threes that he caught the ball in the corner and shot. Like, he wasn't really allowed to do anything else. And to go from that player to a guy that is essentially operating as a point forward a lot, and I think is averaging something like 26, 6, and 6 this year, something close to that, voted him an all-star starter. He's a clear all-NBA player. He is a borderline top five MVP candidate. I mean, to have that kind of growth from him is unbelievable. And frankly, it's pretty unprecedented in the history of the league. And it gives Toronto a chance to go out these next couple summers, and especially in the summer of 2021, when there's going to be a lot of star players available, and say, hey, listen, you guys want to play with a star player, we've got one sitting right here waiting for you to come play with that can play with just about anybody, doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time. Terrific defensive player, good passer. For all the other things that have gone on with the Raptors, and as well as they've played and as well as they've been able to weather the loss of Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard from last summer, the fact that Pascal has taken this leap allows the Raptors to still dream big for the next few years in a way that I think if you'd gone back to this time a year ago, all right, I guess probably 18 months ago, and the Raptors make that Kawhi trade, you think, hey, this is their big swing, and if Kawhi decides to leave, well, they've got these young guys, and they'll be an okay team, and they'll have to sort things out. Now you look at it and say, hey, this team has got a true star, and if they can find another star to go with them, all of a sudden they could be right back in the championship mix for a long time.
And I look at it, Tim, and I don't really care so much about the Raptors, what they're doing these past couple of months. It's like, yes, they've had injuries, but you know, for them, it's the playoffs, and I know what I get when I get to April, May, when it comes to the Toronto Raptors. And then there's the Milwaukee Bucks, who are so much fun to watch in December, in January, coming up in February. And yet I still look at them and I say, yeah, you're running through the regular season, but if Eric Bledsoe is your third best player, is that really a solution? Like, how do you power rank the Eastern Conference as far as viewing it for the playoffs?
Well, listen, if the Bucks, I mean, I've had doubts about Eric Bledsoe and Mike Budenholzer for a long time, both in big situations. So if they both prove me wrong, the Bucks will win the title. Like, it's really that simple. They're playing at a level, they're playing at like an all-time great level, like the 73-win mm-hmm. Warrior level, the 96 Bulls level. I mean, they have the statistical profile of arguably the best team of all time through 45 games. So their questions are about what they've done in the past in the postseason, specifically from a coaching standpoint. And to your point, Bledsoe has disappeared repeatedly in the playoffs. If that happens, they could be in trouble, particularly with the loss of Malcolm Brogdon. But if they prove me wrong from that standpoint, they're the runaway favorite, not just to win the East, but to win the title. So if you set that part aside, I think this Sixer team, despite everything we talked about before and the awkward fit with Ben and Joel, and the up and down nature of their whole season, the Sixers to me have the highest ceiling of any team in the league. And you saw that on Christmas Day when they played the Bucks and they annihilated them in Philly, right? They've played Boston three times. They've swept them, including once without Joel Embiid. Generally, when they play the good teams, they're up and they play really hard and their defense is unbelievable and they win. And it's but the problem with the Sixers is their concentration level fluctuates from game to game, and their effort level fluctuates from game to game. And that's how they can barely scrape by beating teams like the Knicks and then beat the Bucks by 30. So, you know, if they could play with the same effort level that the Bucks do on a game-to-game basis, they would have a chance to – I mean, they would be right up there in terms of wins, and they'd be a dominant team, but they aren't. So or they don't do that, so they're not. So they're in the middle of this pack in the East. So it's a very long-winded way of saying – I think that Philly has the highest ceiling, but to me, these playoffs are really just going to be a referendum on the Bucks and on Mike Budenholzer and Eric Bledsoe. And if they can overcome the past issues they've had in the postseason, you have to look at the Bucks as the favorites to both get out of the East and win the title with the way they're playing.
Lakers play the Knicks tonight. Really quickly, you know, obviously RJ Barrett's been picking up some injuries, but you know, fans in Canada are always keeping an eye on him, and really just the rookie class in general. Ja, Zion, we talked about, but RJ Barrett. You know, just how impressed have you been with all three of these guys so far in their early returns?
Well, no offense, but RJ Barrett is not in the same stratosphere as Ja Morant. RJ has been fine. I think RJ is going to be a really good player. I think he's had. I think it's been unfortunate for him that the Knicks have kind of an oddly constructed team, one that isn't really suited to kind of support what RJ's good at. It's a similar problem, frankly, to the one he had at Duke, where he needs to have a lot of shooters around him. It's not too dissimilar from what the Sixers ironically look like right now with Ben Simmons, where they have the ball in Ben's hand with a lot of shooters around him, and there's a lot of space for him to operate. The Knicks have no shooters on the court with RJ and a lot of guys who need the ball. So he doesn't look great. But I do think in the long term, he's going to be fine. As for this rookie class, it's largely been underwhelming, but Ja Morant has been incredible. He could arguably be an all-star this year. And to me, if I'm projecting this class out 5 or 10 years from now, for all the hype about Zion today, if I'm picking who I think is going to be the best player, I think it's going to be Ja Morant. Assuming health, I think he's got a chance to be a world-class guard. And with the way the league is going, if I can get a world-class guard like that, I'll take him every time. So the Grizzlies have something to be awfully excited about. And although I did just knock him a little bit, I do think RJ is going to be very good, and I'm excited to see what he looks like with Team Canada this summer.
He is Tim Bontemps, NBA writer for ESPN. Tim, enjoy Toronto, and thanks for giving us some time today.
All right, no problem. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tim. He's a great follow on Twitter, at Tim Bontemps. Again, checking out the Raptors-Sixers game.
Just twisting the knife a little bit there at the end, because I'm over it. I'm mostly over the Grizzlies.
I'm not over it.
Okay, you know what hurts?
Not over it.
I shouldn't say I'm over it. It still stings. But I don't hate the Memphis Grizzlies as a franchise. I don't hold it against Memphis. But what does hurt is watching Ja Morant specifically in the throwbacks. When he's doing crazy stuff in the Vancouver jerseys.
You know, I've got a hot take.
Oh, that's tough.
I've got a hot take. So I don't like that these teams, Carolina Hurricanes or the Hartford Whalers, all these teams are wearing the jerseys of the relocated team. But here's a take. If you want to do that, play the game in that city.
Yeah, I like that.
Right?
Now, but what would the reception be, though, if the Grizzlies came back for one night?
Hey, you want to wear Vancouver on your jersey in Memphis? Play the game here.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't hold it against Memphis. I don't hold it against the team itself. But, man, watching him do the crazy dunks and the passes in a freaking Vancouver jersey, that hurts.
Because all you're doing is a cash grab.
Yeah.
So go for a bigger cash grab. Charge whatever you want. Play it here. Play it in Hartford. Go wherever. And there's your cash grab. Like, we all know the con, but let us in on the con. And I would go to an NBA game, man, if Memphis played here in those Vancouver jerseys.
Anything that brings the NBA back to Vancouver, even if it's just for one night, let's do it. Let's
do that. Because you're right. It was heartbreaking. So, like, the first real, like, they've had good seasons, but this is their first superstar.
Yeah, this is the first guy who has, like, off-the-charts potential.
They've had Battier, Gasol, and Gasol was awesome. Gasol's going to go to Hall of Fame, but it wasn't.
Randolph,
It wasn't like, hey, I got to go, like, check out this Gasol highlight.
No.
It was a cool pass into the post or an alley-oop to Bynum or something. It was stuff like that. Battier, Conley, Randolph, all those guys.
Yeah.
Tony Allen. Those were fun teams, but this is the first time. The NBA is a star
league.
He's
like a phenom.
He's a
star-driven league, and this is their first star, bona fide star.
Zion is playing a game in New Orleans, and we're like, oh, my God, Zion, this is so amazing. First time since LeBron. And it's like, it's Pelicans.
Yeah.
But we're excited about Zion.
And Tim.
And he's got a cool name, Ja.
Tim just said he thinks Ja Morant could be better than Zion Williamson. That's the level of talent we're talking about here. And he's occasionally going to wear a Vancouver jersey. Oh,
that
hurts.
Play the game in Vancouver. Canuck Central coming up. We're going to talk to Allison Lucan, who covers the Columbus Blue Jackets. One of the best stories in the NHL right now. They keep on winning, find themselves in a playoff spot. Lose Panarin, lose Duchesne, lose Bobrovsky. Doesn't matter. They're in the playoffs. We'll talk to her. Also just about the NHL in general. Plus, get to more of your texts. But Ryan Kessler, 650, 650, keep them coming. It's the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.